This is Donovan Morningfire, and I am not a Game On minion. Unless, of course, Cat needs a minion, but that's something else entirely, and yeah, I'm gonna shut up now. Not a Game On minion. Bye.
This is GM Dave, Program Director, D20 Radio, and I touch my meeples there.
Directly with the correct amount.
D20 Radio, your gamer's role.
www.d20radio.com.
Game on.
Congratulations, Gamer Nation. It's Sunday, May 10th, 2009, and you've made it to episode number 20 of Game On. It's Mother's Day, and we've got a couple of special moms who let us do the podcast anyway. Thanks, moms.
Yes, thank you, Mom.
I'm your host, Brian, Fiddleback on the forums, and with me by contractual obligation is the man whose birth certificate doubles as a coupon for a free burger and fries at McDonald's, Andy.
That's right, Gamer Nation. Be careful when you reach into that Happy Meal box. It vibrates.
Oh, I can see your pink slip coming any time now.
You can't fire me. Slaves have to be sold.
Well, that's right. What are we going to talk about today, Andy?
Oh, well, you know, it's all about beginnings, Gamer Nation. Brian, Jake, and I are starting a new RPG campaign, and guess what? We're dragging you along for the ride. So buckle up as we prepare for a Star Wars Saga Edition game of epic proportions. Epic.
Epic indeed. This'll be fun. Upkeep phase.
Today we give thanks not only to our mothers, but also the fine folks who sent in bumpers you heard at the top of the show. GM Dave and Donovan Morningfire, if you'd like to send us a bumper and claim your Game On minionhood, or not, you can do so by emailing them to us at gameon@d20radio.com. We look forward to hearing from you and can't wait to get your voice prints on record. And I'd just like to go on record as saying, Dave, we don't want to hear about you touching your meeples anymore.
Oh, no. Get your wood your own way.
God! Should have seen that one coming.
Uh-huh. Yeah. The D20 Radio Network has put out some other excellent shows we want to take a moment and tell you about. And here they are.
The Order 66 podcast, D20 Radio's Star Wars Saga Edition podcast, has hit episode 66! And they are having a sort of celebration. It's a massive 2.5-hour episode with more guests than you can shake a lightsaber at. Game designers Rodney Thompson, Sterling Hershey, Gary Sarley, and Gary Asselford, as well as Darth Vader's secret apprentice from The Force Unleashed, Sam Witwer. Take a moment to congratulate the boys and answer a veritable ton of listener questions. Check it out in Order 66, Episode 66. Execute Order 66. Here's to 66 more.
Let's say 66 two more times.
Okay, 66.
66. Tiny, tiny bits of information continue to come out of BioWare about the upcoming MMO Star Wars The Old Republic, and the Holocron continues to keep you up to date. Episode number 10 went out on Friday night in the biggest rush you've ever seen. We had to. The announcement of the new trooper class for the game was just too cool to wait. GM Dave, Mostly Joe, and myself give the trooper a once-over and talk briefly about the latest comic issue for Threat of Peace. For all your Star Wars The Old Republic needs, listen to the Holocron number 10, The Trooper.
Yeah, as long as they keep coming out with new classes, it's just making me want to play it all that much more.
I can't decide.
I can't either. I think everybody's obvious choice is, a Jedi or Sith because, you get the whole lightsaber thing going on. But
I get a glowy stick.
I get a glow stick. Yeah, there's a lot more going on out there, so we will see. Radio Free Hamlet comes at you with an episode all about the Invoker for D&D 4th Edition. Adventure number 20, Cooler Than Thou, has the DMs digging into the Invoker as well as discussing hybrid rangers in their build this segment. If D&D 4th Edition is your thing, make sure you're catching Radio Free Hamlet. Now, Hybrid Ranger, does he come with a bear and a picnic basket, or what's the deal going on here?
I believe so. I'm going to go and get me a picnic basket. Come on, boo-boo.
What? Oh, yeah. Ranger Smith. I get it. It's funny. Mostly Joe returns after a stay in Arkham Asylum with, meanwhile, the Super Gaming Podcast episode number 14, Mutant City Blues, in which, somehow, he scores an interview with Robin D. Laws. That's Feng Shui Robin D. Laws, for those of you keeping score at home. I don't know how he does it.
I don't either.
It's a fascinating interview, and I'm glad Joe is working for our side. No way a man with that kind of power should be working for the enemy.
It's frightening. True. Frightening, frightening, frightening. Listen to all these shows and more at www.d20radio.com. And while you're there, follow a link and join our discussion forums where you, yes, you, can interact with all the show hosts and others like-minded members of the gamer community. Like-minded. That means we're all twisted in the head just a little bit.
Bits and pieces.
From the news desk this week, we bring you the following bits and pieces.
D20 Radio's own Vaderson, otherwise known as Duncan, has put his dice on the line at Origins and will be hosting several RPG sessions at the convention. Origins event registration will begin May 12th at noon. Noon.
Noon.
That's when the big hand and the little hand are both on the 12. Okay, Origins is June 24th through 28th. And take note, Gamer Nation, these are the events that Vaderson will be running. Event 6100 and 6819, Star Wars Death of the Star of Agnor, set 15 years after A New Hope, a New Republic ambassador and her Jedi companions find themselves on the starliner Star of Agnor along with a small mercenary band when a vicious pirate attacks. Can the two groups join together to stop the evil pirates? This game will use the current Star Wars Saga Edition rule set by Wizards of the Coast. Characters provided, new players welcome. Sessions are Wednesday at 7 p.m. and Friday at 2 p.m. Should last about 4 hours and cost you $4 per session.
What a bargain.
Indeed. Episode.
There's a 66 in there.
Podcasting on the brain. Event 6679, Star Wars The Betrayal of Darth Revan. This is the Star Wars Saga Edition RPGA module run at Gen Con 2008. Play a critical role in the events leading up to the Knights of the Old Republic video game. New players are welcome. Characters are provided. And that will go at Friday at 9 a.m. 9 in the morning. 9 in the morning. That's 9 in the morning, children.
That's early for gamer time.
Uh-huh, especially if you're at a convention, but okay. About a four-hour duration on that one, and $4 a ticket. And I'm personally very excited about this, event 7456. Vaderson is going to run Dark Conspiracy, Terror from the Woods.
Oh.
This will be cool. The old Game Designer's Workshop game of Dark Conspiracy is set in a dark future not too far off. In this case, you awake from a terrible dream, sure that something horrible has entered our world. Can you hunt it down in time before it threatens all life as we know it? No experience necessary for this game. You can come into it cold, without a clue. Sunday at 10 a.m. Again, about 4 hours and $4 for a ticket.
That sounds like a cool cool setting.
That's going to be awesome.
That'll be fun. I'm sad that I won't be there.
I am too. I'm very sad. And I think I'm going to have an announcement later on in the show about something, or a request or something.
Well.
So I didn't put it in the notes, so we'll all be surprised. Hoorah! I'll probably forget by the time we get there, but that's
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, well, whatever.
Okay.
Fine. I'll read my bit now.
Okay.
Leading video game developer BioWare, perhaps you've heard of them.
That sounds familiar.
A division of Electronic Arts Incorporated announced that Green Ronin Publishing will launch a pen-and-paper role-playing game based on the highly anticipated video game Dragon Age Origins. The pen-and-paper game extends the Dragon Age universe, making it more accessible to passionate RPG fans looking for another way to experience the epic fantasy world of Thedas. I hope I said that correctly.
Thedas. You say potato, I say potato. I don't get it.
Yeah, sure, whatever. We're delighted to be working with Green Ronin to explore more of the Dragon Age universe through a pen and paper role-playing game. We're excited to deliver Dragon Age's unique, dark, heroic fantasy to our audience in a brand new way. A perfect complement to the landmark game we're launching on PC, Xbox 360, and PlayStation 3 this fall, said Dr. Ray Muzyka. Muzyka?
Yeah, go with that.
Yeah, whatever. Where do you get these people's names?
I make them up.
Okay, General Manager and CEO, BioWare. Our development team, Craft, which... Wow, let's try that one more time.
Ba-dum-bum. I was going to say I have a chart against which I roll 2d10 and pick two random names.
Oh, okay. Well, it's working.
Thank you.
Our development teams, Craft, Rich, Deep Worlds, and this is an excellent way to expand the franchise. Okay, made it through that one.
Yes, except Dr. Ray said it much more fluently.
I'm sure he did, because, you know, he would have said it. Wow. Dragon Age Origins has been described as the spiritual successor to BioWare's Baldur's Gate, one of the most highly acclaimed fantasy computer RPGs in the world. Here's a bold statement. So when BioWare approached us to do a pen and paper version, we had to say, yes, said Green Ronin president Chris Pramas. With our work on Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay, Black Company, and Thieves World, dark fantasy is in our blood, and Dragon Age Origins is the best in its class. An opportunity to collaborate with BioWare on Dragon Age Origins was not to be missed. The Dragon Age pen and paper RPG will be available at card shops, book and comic retailers in summer 2009. The first release will be a box set, perfect for new and experienced role players alike. Green Ronin plans to release additional box sets and supplemental books, expanding the Dragon Age world even further.
That's interesting.
It is. I'm not familiar with that setting. I haven't seen the video game or heard anything about it, but I have heard talk of it.
I think it's got dragons.
Yeah, it's just a guess on my part, but you know how they do things nowadays.
Although I do have to agree with you, the spiritual successor to BioWare's Baldur's Gate, that doesn't do much for me because I never got that Baldur's Gate to run successfully for more than about 10 minutes on any computer.
Yeah, I played Baldur's Gate and it was an okay game, but it was much more of a hack and slash than an actual RPG. Anyways, that's how I felt about it.
Okay. Well, to find out more about what's been going on in the gaming world, be sure to check out these fine websites: www.gamingreport.com, www.boardgamenews.com, and www.robotviking.com.
Say, I'm looking for some sort of abstract strategy game, something with possibly parasitic conflict or bidding and economics. Something with majority control and mass marketing. Min-maxing. It'll make people want to run away in fear, not playing anything other than rock, paper, scissors. Have you got anything like that?
What the heck did he just say?
It's a bit like a Rubik's Cube, this thing we call gaming. You twist and turn a few bits and look at it, then, you know, dismantle it and stick it back together properly. And no one said you couldn't do that either. But around here, we like to give you a little guide so that maybe you can at least solve the blue side of things.
Oh, dear. Just the blue side.
That's right.
Protagonist. Noun. The leading character, hero, or heroine of a drama or other literary work.
Antagonist. Noun. A person who is opposed to, struggles against, or competes with another, opponent, or adversary. Now, on with the show. Well, Gamer Nation, we're beginning an enterprise here that may or may not turn out to be successful. We've decided we're ready to run another RPG campaign. And Andy and Jake will be playing the characters, and I will, of course, be your evil overlord.
Yeah.
So we thought it would be kind of interesting to share this with Gamer Nation, the process that we personally go through when beginning a campaign from both the GM's perspective and the player's perspective, and maybe walk you through gradually these little steps we take from beginning to eventual end, however that may be. And we've already done a couple of shows where we talk about things to consider beforehand, so we're going to skip that kind of portion of it, and we're going to talk about the actual campaign design and what we think it is that we're going to try to do. And this may be an ongoing series of shows, so maybe the next three or four shows would be about this, and we'll walk you through various stages of the process as we come to them. So sit back, relax, take a few notes, and see if you can learn anything here.
I know I will.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm going to try not to give too much away, sir, because that would spoil the surprise.
Oh, and undoubtedly, there will be at least one, if not multiple, surprises.
Oh, yes. So let's begin at the beginning. The other day, you said something to me, and what was it?
I don't remember.
That's right. I want to play an RPG.
Oh, yeah. That whole thing.
Yeah, that whole thing.
Well, we had talked about starting up the Deadlands campaign, possibly, and then we've had such a hard time just, you know, getting a board game onto the table between me working, Jake traveling and doing things, and, you know, just not being able to get everybody together. And so now that it appears that our schedules have somewhat stabilized, how long that'll last, I don't know. If I could find a hydro spanner to lock it down, I would. I've kind of been missing the RPG thing. I want to get back into it, and we kind of kicked that around as to what we were going to do, because you and I had both bought a couple of books here lately for the Firefly Serenity campaign, and I've always been a fan of that system since it came out. We've always had a lot of fun with it. And then Jake had also mentioned that he really wanted to do the Deadlands, but with so much buzz here lately about the Old Republic MMO, I've gotten kind of back into a Star Wars kind of mode, and we kind of settled on doing something for Star Wars.
Yes, so naturally I ignored the suggestions of my players and went, okay, let's do Star Wars.
Because that's what he does.
That's right. Never do what they expect. It's, you know, more fun that way. All right, so yeah, we decided we were going to do Star Wars Saga Edition. And this is kind of there's a twofold reason for this, because one reason in the back of my mind was, well, maybe we can do something with this for the podcast. And look, here we are. And the other reason is neither Andy nor I, well, no, actually Andy has, but neither Andy or I have run a successful Star Wars Saga Edition campaign yet.
Was mine successful?
Like I said. And part of that, as we all know by now, because we're in episode 20 of this show, and every so often we mention that our group sucked. But I have two people I feel fairly certain will not devolve into suckage. So I have chosen my group carefully. In other words, those people who still talk to me.
There's only two of us to choose from.
Yes. I've chosen my group carefully. Yes, this is going to be a two-player game. And that presents some unique difficulties in and of itself, which if you would like to hear about them, may I suggest listening to the Order 66, Episode 66, Execute Episode 66. Yeah, anyway, because they do talk about that. There will be some balance considerations to have. But let's get with the basic premise, what I gave to you guys as your sort of guidelines for creating characters. I've decided that this campaign is going to be a little different. Pretty much every Star Wars campaign I've played in, whether it's Saga Edition or the OCR Edition or anything else, has always involved this thing called a Jedi. And to my mind, there's a lot of stuff that is tailored to the Jedi. And I would like to do something different than the Jedi. So I have instead instructed both these fine gentlemen, Andy and Jake, to construct, build, or otherwise create a noble class character. Thoughts?
Which is completely and totally left field of where I'm used to playing.
Yes, we like a challenge.
Yes. And actually, this will be a very good learning experience for myself and Jake. For me, because I haven't played this particular character class before, so that'll put me on pretty close to level footing with Jake, because he has relatively little experience with RPGs in general, and then, of course, this type of character class. So I think it will be interesting to see how the characters develop.
Yes, and I have some very specific reasons for doing this. The campaign I'm looking at, I've instructed them that it's going to focus more on diplomacy and skill challenges and things like that than it is on direct combat. So I told them, yes, have some combat skills, but do not make that the focus of your character, because I have an idea that I can't really go into with Andy here. But I think it's going to be quite interesting, and it may help you to picture what this idea could be if you realize that I've also told them that it is set in the Knights of the Old Republic era.
Yeah, and that right there throws an entirely different light on that particular character class, because that's something that was prevalent and necessary in that age.
Yes, indeed. So you may fully expect to have to negotiate with some potentially unsavory characters.
Yes.
Yeah. The other thing I haven't told them yet, but I will tell them now because I know Jake listens to the podcast. You may fully expect to have to perhaps command some troops.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that... okay.
Mm-hmm.
That gives me an idea of where I need to go with my character.
Yes, indeed. And you may also fully expect that while you are not senators yourselves, you are somehow tied to the Republic Senate.
Excellent. Okay, that... because I was having a... Like I said, I haven't played this class before, so I was having a difficult time deciding where I wanted to focus my abilities on, and now that you've said that, that gives me a much clearer path to follow that I can round things out with. Because there's actually some very interesting things that you can do with a noble.
Oh, yes. They're quite the interesting little class. Order 66 has several episodes about what happens with nobles.
Yeah.
So, essentially, given that series of pieces of information there, Mr. Andy, fill in Gamer Nation on your thoughts now about the character you were telling me about.
I think it'll still work. I had several initial thoughts, but I've kind of narrowed them down to looking at doing a male Twi'lek noble. The Twi'leks get the perks for character charisma, and I believe there's intelligence bump in there as well. So I may still go along that lines, but I'm still kind of up in the air. There's a few other classes or a few other races that I kind of want to take a look at, but it sounds like it could be a very interesting character to play now.
Yeah, I think that's actually going to fit pretty well with what I have in mind. So as we're talking along about this, hopefully my perspective will be the GM's perspective, and hopefully Andy's perspective will be the player's perspective. And you'll see not only how those two kind of go together, but how they diverge. I've got a fairly sweeping general idea of the overall story arc of this thing, which, of course, if I tell you right now, is going to kind of spoil Andy's enjoyment of it, and we don't want to do that because Andy cries in the corner when I do that to him.
I do.
Yeah. And what I'm looking at, okay, I'll give you a brief rundown here. Just like I said, this is a very general outline. You're going to start on Coruscant. You will probably, your first scene will be set up in the Senate itself, the big, you know, floaty disk meeting room there.
Mm-hmm.
And you will receive an assignment from that point, which you, I'm going to guess, will not like.
Oh, God. I already see where this is going.
I will tell you right now that you are not going to have to deal with Revan and Malik. All right? I'll make that part easy for you.
But, not yet, anyways.
Yeah. Uh-huh. But I will also tell you that, like I said before, you will be dealing with some unsavory characters, doing some unsavory things, and you are going to have to deal with it in some way. So that's eventually we'll get to a point where I can talk a little bit more about the story, you know, and as we play the various sessions, we'll get you up to date on the story so far. But one of the considerations we have is that since both Andy and Jake are going to be playing nobles, that does leave them, just by their very nature, kind of short in the fighty-pokey end of things.
Yeah, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, granted, the noble is certainly capable of combat, but they're not geared directly towards it, so...
Yes, so there may be a small contingent of GM-controlled NPCs that are there to assist with that aspect of things, should it be necessary. But if you're doing your job properly, it won't be necessary.
Right. And see, that's where the challenge comes for me specifically. You fall more into the line of the diplomat and being the well worded one, where I, you know, tend to rely on shooting first and not second. So
yep. Playing against type. That's what I'm looking for on this one, is
yeah.
Playing against type.
And I think it's good to do that, because the more variations of themes that you play on, the more of an overall well-rounded player you become. If you can play all of the different types of characters, then you can react to, you know, any situation that's presented to you. And so I like to do this and take something that's completely out of the norm for me, which the noble definitely is.
Yes. Now, you're going to tell me how good nobles are at skill checks. That's what you're going to tell me right now.
Nobles are pretty decent at skill checks.
Uh-huh. Pretty decent.
Decent.
Yeah. I'm anticipating that there will be things that your noble will be lacking in. So I'm anticipating that you may need access to, an astromech droid of some sort.
Ha 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 ha.
Mm-hmm. So look forward to that.
Okay.
And the reason, Gamer Nation, that there seem to be a lot of GM-controlled NPCs in this one is because there are only two players. And yes, you can scale the adventure up and down, and I'm certainly taking that into account. For the number of players that you have available to you, there are some areas where you're going to have to be able to do certain things, and you need some sort of way to do those. You don't want an adventure to fail simply because your PCs lack the ability to do something. And yes, you provide a number of ways to accomplish any given goal, but even then, sometimes it's just best to have a little extra, you know, guy who's kind of your skill monkey or your shooter guy or whatever. So I'm anticipating that and providing for that. Now, some GMs get attached to their NPCs that they run for the players, and then they become the stars of the story. Yeah, I don't have that problem.
Yeah.
Because 9 times out of 10, I'll forget the NPCs there in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, and it will, and in fact, I'm just going to say right now, it will be up to you guys to remember that they're there and to ask for their help when you need it. They will be extremely subservient to you.
Right. And I don't think that'll be a problem, because if a situation arises where, you know, it is going to be combat, I don't think there's going to be any problem remembering I've got a gun monkey standing here somewhere. So.
Yeah.
Because I am not bulletproof.
Yeah. Put the trooper out front.
Yeah. Yeah. Lasers, they go right through me.
That's right. So what do you see right now as the strengths of the noble? What are you going to try to play to?
Well, charisma is obviously your power stat, and that will play on your negotiating skills, your speech, how well you interact with other characters, other NPCs. So that's probably going to be my biggest primary stat.
Okay.
Moving along, probably I would imagine intelligence coming in next. Not so sure on wisdom on this one. I mean, wisdom would help on it, but I think intelligence will play a bigger role than wisdom will on that. Dexterity is good to have for anything, just simply getting out of the way, or, you know, if you do need to go to the guns to do things of that nature. Constitution is going to be a worrisome issue. A diplomat doesn't need to be this big armored person. That's why he has the staff with him. But most of the characters, most of the races that I've looked at have a constitution negative on them. So it's going to be even more of an issue for me. So there's a lot of different things that I'm trying to juggle around in there. If I'm building a soldier or a Jedi or a scoundrel or something like that, it's very easy where some of these, where these numbers need to go in the stats. For this one, since I haven't played this type before, is presenting a challenge to me. It's interesting because I'm having to think differently on how to create this character.
Excellent. That's exactly what I want. I want some thinking different. Because, yeah, you're right. You do tend to play the gun monkey, the guy who shoots a lot and lets other people figure things out a little bit. And I want to take you out of that, and I want to show you some other neat things that you can do.
Right. And there's nothing wrong with playing those types of characters if that's what you enjoy playing. But I think you can typecast yourself, and that's all you ever wind up playing. If you never move on to any of the other types of characters, you'll never figure out what you're missing, and there's a lot to be offered in the different character types.
Yeah. So now the other thing I have to ask you is, and because we're designing this game to be fun for everybody, I will eventually pose this question to Jake as well. But what are some of the things you would like to do in the course of the story?
Wow. Well, as you said, our first mission that you give us, you said that we probably will not want to go on. So I'm assuming we'll be going into a region of undesirables and trying to gain favor with them, or border negotiations, allowing troops to cross here over to there, or something of that nature. So I think that will probably fulfill a few things that I'm looking for. It's like I said, since I haven't played this type of character before, I'm not real sure what to expect from the adventure. But I'm hoping it won't turn into just a debate session in the Senate. But that in itself could be interesting because of where it could drive the storyline itself.
Yes, absolutely. That could be very interesting. Yeah. Writing that down right there. You're right. That could be, especially if we can get our roleplay working really well, that could be very interesting to actually have to settle for, a debate.
Yeah, and that's, I guess that's where I thought when looking through the main rule book initially, I was like, why would you want to play a noble? What's the point? And then if you sit down and actually read what the noble does and what the noble's capable of, there are so many different ways that a noble can change the shift of a game just by being there in his interaction. Like I said, the charisma stat in that one is just going to play a huge part in it.
Mm-hmm. And I see a lot of opportunity. This may or may not be another hint. I see a lot of opportunity for you guys to affect the galaxy at large just from the standpoint of a negotiation or policy making.
Right, and that's another thing that I'm thinking would be really interesting to do. I think a lot of players, when they get into a campaign, they become so narrowly focused on just themselves or the people in their party and accomplishing that one specific goal. In this type of setting, being nobles associated with the Senate, like you said, we have the possibility to change, you know, policies and actions and operations galaxy-wide.
Yes.
Which is really cool in the KOTOR setting.
Mm-hmm. You might even be able to affect what planets join the Republic.
Oh, yeah. I mean, see, there's a whole story-changing opportunity.
Yes, many interesting things I saw when I thought about this.
Yeah, and it's very interesting to contemplate that sort of thing, because you could really change the outcome of, you know, what happens in the coming years with the Republic and the Senate. You know, there may never be an empire, depending on what goes on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing you have to be careful of too, is because you know the history down the line.
Right.
As a player, but your character doesn't.
Correct. And so you have to be careful and not fall into that loop of thinking to where, well, this is what happens. No, it hasn't happened yet. You get to make it happen as you're playing the game. Mm-hmm. So that's where it really becomes a lot of fun to get in and do something like this. Yes.
So obviously, while we may be beginning from a point that is entrenched in canon, we are not going to be sticking to that.
Right. And I think part of my problem when I get into a campaign, especially with something of this, is I tend to fall into the storyline mode. And I tried not to do that when I did our KOTOR campaign, obviously using the planets and the systems and stuff that were available at that time. But I was trying to do something a little bit different. And this really sounds interesting to me. So.
Cool. That's what I like to hear. Another question for you. Have you thought much about backstory for your character yet?
I've been thinking about it, but I haven't really come up with anything. Now that I have a few more bits of information, I can tie a few things together, I think, and try and come up with a decent backstory for him, because that was one of the things that I got a lot out of when we did Star Wars as well as D20 Modern. The backstory on your characters that you provided me with gave me so much more information to use in the storyline and push the story in different directions. And I was, especially in our D20 Modern campaign, I was able to use your backstory to specifically push you in a certain direction where I knew your character didn't want to go.
Yes, and I'm going to give you some backstory. I don't want you to just to kind of restrict your backstory to entirely this, but I want to give you a couple of what I'm going to call anchor points.
Okay.
Okay, things that I'd like to see in your backstory because they might prove important later on.
Okay.
I want to know how your character got involved with the Senate. And I want to know what your character's personal goals are.
Okay.
All right. And that's kind of generally, you know, I know normally when you do a backstory or I do a backstory, there's always kind of a goal or a point written in the backstory, but specifically I want to know what your character plans to accomplish by being in the Senate, I guess.
Okay.
Would be a better way to put that.
Right.
So, let me think if there's anything else that I need to take care of in terms of your specific character creation instructions. Don't be an orphan.
Okay.
Nobody likes an orphan. And in fact, as a noble, you'd better not be an orphan because...
Yeah, no kidding.
You got, you know, some backstory and just built into the family.
And see, I was... That's something I'm looking at for my character creation as well, as to what background I want them to come from and what race I want them to be. Now, my first... one of my first choices for the Twi'lek was because of the charisma bonus and kind of the way that they interact with people. But I also want it to be a believable character and background as well.
Yes, indeed. And I know you won't, but this is kind of general advice to the Gamer Nation at large, is I don't really like cookie-cutter characters. Even in my own characters, I don't like cookie-cutter characters. In other words, sure, you could be a soldier whose only job it is to go out and fight whoever they point you at, and that's, you know, all well and good, but that's more the NPC's style.
Right.
You know, and so if you make a soldier, or if I make a soldier, there's always something I got to play with or twist or mess with just a little bit to make it my character.
And when we did my KOTOR campaign, your character had plenty of backstory. He had goals, he had ambitions, he had things that he felt he needed revenge for. He had a very conflicting storyline as to where he had been, where he was going to, you know, his planet being taken over. You know, he thought that the Empire was the ones, you know, thought that they were the bad guys because he was working for the Sith, and actually the Sith were in the background pulling all the strings, and it made for a very, very good character.
Mm-hmm. And I think, and we've had a whole show about this before, but the more thought you put into the backstory, the more believable your character is and the more opportunity your GM has to work with that character and build them into the story and really make them a part of it, so that the story becomes about the characters rather than just about the story.
Right, and that's what I said earlier. Giving your character a good background story gives the GM an opportunity to make that character a part of the story, and it's not just something, you know, that's been cut out and pasted into the scene, so, you know, it doesn't really look like it's there. He is a part of that story. He has background pertaining to what's going on around him. There's a reason for him to be there.
Yes, indeed. And this campaign is going to be kind of a challenge for me, too, because I've never run an entirely there's not going to be some combat in it, but a lower level combat campaign.
Right. I think that's what a lot of people are used to, is, you know, okay, well, we're at the tavern. Where do we, you know, what are we going to kill first? So, and there's nothing wrong with combat in a game. That's a lot of fun. And there's a lot of different things that you can do in combat. There's a lot of different tactics that you can use. And there, you know, it's an integral part of the game. However, I think something of this nature is something that has kind of fallen by the wayside over the years, that too many people get sidelined into just a pure combat character. And the more I think about doing the noble, the diplomat, and the negotiator, the more interesting it becomes to me.
Yeah, and my particular challenges as DM is going to be making sure that skill challenges are up to snuff, making sure that the situations you find yourself in are interesting enough to replace what would normally be some sort of a combat scene or whatever.
Right.
And making sure that you guys feel compelled to continue to follow the story to its conclusion, and don't get bored with constant, you know, oh, I gotta negotiate with this guy again, or I gotta go over here and try to get this resolved, or that kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things that kind of disenchants me about the negotiations is one of our other former gaming group members, a negotiation for him was not a negotiation. There was a set rail that you were to follow, and it didn't matter what you said or did with the person that you were interacting with, it was going in one direction only.
Right. And I think a lot of that is going to be helped by the fact that I intend to do not necessarily full backgrounds for all the NPCs you come across, but a pretty good chunk of background. You know, things like outlining what a particular PC wants or NPC wants or doesn't want, or, you know, what his goal is in the situation, all that. Kind of laying that out for each of the major NPCs that you guys are going to encounter, so that they are a little more full and feel more like a real character than just like a cardboard cutout put there to talk to.
Right, and I think that will help myself and Jake as the players, because the more background you have on who you're dealing with and who you're negotiating with, if you know their weaknesses, you know their strengths, if you know what their goals and their aspirations are, you can use those to shape and, if necessary, twist the plot in your direction.
Yes, indeed. And while we're talking about Jake, do you, I mean, you're going to have to kind of bring Jake along with you because he's never played in this before, but do you anticipate any particular difficulties that you need to prepare for or help Jake out with before things even get rolling?
I think the biggest thing at this point will be sitting down with him and kind of talking about the things that we're talking about now, finding out what he wants his character to accomplish. You said, okay, you're going to make a noble. And, you know, he, for all intents and purposes, doesn't know what that is.
Right.
So, you know, we'll go into the books, we'll explain to him what a noble is, what tasks they perform, what they're good at, what they're weak at, and then kind of give him a little more background. You know, we're not directly involved with the Senate, but, we're involved with it. We're not senators. We're going to be working with high-level officials, military, all kinds of different things. How do you want the story to progress, and, you know, how do you want to fit into it? And I think that will help him create a character, as well as myself helping me create a character. And by doing that, I think that it will hopefully clear up some of the problems that he might have. Now, I think the biggest thing is the misconceptions that he may have about going into this type of campaign, because I know he had mentioned before a couple of games we played after having seen the movies, such as the Star Wars saga, as well as Serenity and Firefly. When he played in those games, they weren't what he was expecting. He was expecting the movie. And so we kind of need to pull him back away from that a little bit. It's the Star Wars galaxy. It's a Star Wars timeline setting, and it's a lot of different Star Wars characters and amenities, but we're kind of forging our own path here and making a new timeline within this universe.
Yeah, and that is definitely one thing we're going to have to work with Jake. And hello, Jake, I know you're listening, so. is divorcing him from those preconceived notions about what Star Wars is and how it's supposed to work.
Right.
And yes, to a certain extent, a lot of the things are going to be familiar, but I'm really hoping that both you and Jake can act in ways that don't rely on that familiarity and are unique to each of your characters. In other words, we're really playing kind of a game of our own, I guess is what I'm trying to say, that just happens to be using the Star Wars universe and its own particular tropes to accomplish the story we want to tell.
Right. I think it can be, there's a potential to have a lot of fun with this, but I think that's my biggest worry, is that Jake will be not as enthusiastic about the game because it's not quite what he was anticipating happening.
Right. And hopefully we can help him over that hurdle. And, you know, as we get together next week to make our character or make you guys make your characters or whatever, we can have this discussion, like you said, with him at the time. And of course he'll have listened to the podcast by then. So he'll kind of know what direction we're headed with things.
Right.
And he'll be, I think, more prepared to come in and really get into the idea of his character and really begin to kind of visualize what kind of character he's going to be within the limits I've set.
Right. And I think something that will work with him, and I've just kind of now come to this realization, because of the type of jobs that all three of us have at the moment, I think negotiating will play a viable part in it, because that's something we do all day long with our clients, is negotiate with them and try and get them to understand our point of view to help them.
And that's why I'm a genius.
Indeed.
But that does bring up an interesting point. Are we playing a little too close to home?
I don't think so. I mean, negotiating is negotiating. It doesn't matter what the context of it is. I think in this particular timeline for Star Wars, being it's the Old Republic, I think it's a very prevalent way to take the story, simply because there were so many negotiations that went on, that there were so many treaties, that there were so many battles, and a lot of this stuff hinged on and took place, you know, through the Senate as to what, you know, what they wanted to do, what they didn't want to do. And, you know, that's how border skirmishes break out. That's how negotiations fall through. And I just think it'll be a really interesting campaign.
Yeah, I'm hoping it will be a lot of fun. And if we all do it right, it will be a lot of fun in spite of the kind of going against the grain of the you know, the combat and the characters we're used to playing and that kind of stuff. I'm thinking that this is enough of a change of pace that it's going to feel like the whole thing is brand new and fresh and interesting and exciting, and especially since we're really going to start digging into these rules, the Saga Edition rules, which I've never had to GM before, but I'm really looking forward to trying out.
Yeah, it's a fun system. It's one of the more enjoyable systems to use, and I know I've said this before. The Saga Edition system is, to me, very intuitive and very easy. To me, it seems very fluid, but I still can't sometimes wrap my head around 4th Edition. And the problem I run into is, and I've mentioned this to several other people, if you go in and you play a game of 4th Edition, you have to realize that 4th Edition is a completely and totally new system. It is not an upgrade from 3.5. It has, you know, little to do with 3.5 in the way that they've revamped everything. But Star Wars is just, it's been a lot of fun to play with.
Yeah. And hopefully you'll be able to stay in your speeder.
I stayed in it okay. It was Rob that got dumped out.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Anyway. So Gamer Nation, this is that crucial first step when embarking on a new adventure or a new campaign in an RPG, which is the discussion with your player about expectations, both on the player's side and the GM side, where you want things to go and how you want things to play. And hopefully, if Andy's doing his job right, and I know he is, he takes this discussion we've had and he goes home and he thinks about it, and he comes up with a character and an idea for where he wants his character to go that meshes reasonably well with what I have in terms of ideas for where the story's going to go.
And I think that's probably one of the most important things that a GM can do, is to sit down with his players and discuss what he wants to do with the campaign, what he expects of the characters, and also what the characters expect of the GM and where they want to go with the campaign. And if there's enough background between the two, then you can get the characters and the campaign to mesh up correctly, and it will run much better.
Yes, indeed, because I could very easily have said, oh yeah, you guys want to play an RPG? Okay, we'll play Star Wars. Make a bounty hunter and make a smuggler.
Yeah.
And then told you nothing else.
Yeah, and I could have gotten away with that, but I think this is much more in-depth and detailed, and in the end will be much more fun, much more entertaining, and I know I will, and I hope Jake takes a lot more away from it, from the standpoint of doing something different and, you know, getting away from the cookie-cutter type of characters.
Yeah, because if you come to the table with Captain Generico and Lord Off-Brand, there's no telling whether or not that's going to fit with what the GM is doing.
I love Lord Off-Brand. He is so great.
Yeah, there's no telling if it's going to fit with what your GM has in mind, and there's really no telling even if the GM has anything in mind. So what you get is this kind of mishmash where everybody's trying to readjust for what the thing actually turns out to be, and those campaigns, those adventures don't usually work out very well.
Yeah, and they're usually, you know, painful to have to sit through.
That's right.
Join us now as we enter a world that many think doesn't exist. A world of strange sights, strange sounds, and pleasant scents. Come with us to That's What She Said.
Hey, this is Kat. Like most girls, I like pretty things. and the prettiest game I've ever played is Zuro. It doesn't hurt that I like Asian aesthetics, or that I'm a sucker for good artwork, but it's relatively simple to play, and easy to learn, it's not terribly expensive, it's fun, and it's gorgeous. I wish there were more games like this. Now don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that a game has to be pretty for you to enjoy playing it. I'm just saying that Zuro shows that game and art don't have to be mutually exclusive terms.
On the table.
Games are everywhere, and some of them, inevitably, find their way onto our table. And then get played, which is the fairly amazing part of the whole thing.
Indeed, because it just doesn't happen that often anymore.
No, it's kind of weird. So, Andy, I'm not sure which of the multitude of things we wanted to talk about we want to talk about first, but I'm going to talk about the Call of Cthulhu living card game.
Excellent.
That's right, Gamer Nation. I bought a game this last week. It was not, of course, the game I went into the store for. Because I, once again, walked around with wasabi in my hand. I looked at wasabi and I went, wasabi. I could play this. This would be cool. Let me head over to the count. Oh. Call of Cthulhu, living card game. I'm going to get that. It's got pretty pictures.
Ooh, shiny.
Yeah. I ooh shinied all over that one. So Call of Cthulhu, living card game. It is a collectible card game that is not collectible, if that helps explain anything to you.
Clear as mud.
Good. Excellent. What they're doing essentially is putting the cards out. Whenever they release a new set, they put out all the cards in the set in a package, and you buy the package and you now own all the cards in the set. You didn't have to pay $75,000 to get all 40 cards.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yes. Very nice. Thank you, Fantasy Flight Games. I had said previously on another show that this was something I was actually interested in checking out, and you had expressed surprise at that because you didn't think I was, and well, there you go.
I guess I was surprised at it because I guess I'm under the impression that you don't care for H.P. Lovecraft's writing, but I don't know what your feelings are on the Cthulhu mythos.
There you go.
I know we both play Arkham Horror, so maybe that's just the whole thing.
Yeah. And there you go. That's really the essential problem there is H.P. Lovecraft, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, he's overrated. And I realize that hurts some of your feelings, and you're now angry and sad and you know, disappointed all at the same time. But understand, the man is the king of the random diversion. Okay? He'll be running along in the middle of the story, and all of a sudden he wants to stop and talk about something else that has nothing to do with what the main story is in any real way, you know? And he's annoying to me to read. And I actually read an entire collection of his short stories, and it included the big Cthulhu story. And I gotta tell you, doesn't do it for me. So that's my opinion. You're entitled to yours. However, having said that, I like the idea of what he's writing about. So while the Big Cthulhu story wasn't all that wonderful, I did like the idea of Big Cthulhu.
Yeah.
Okay, and you know, some of the things he presents are fairly interesting. So anyway, the point being of all this is that, yes, while I don't enjoy his writing, so far I have enjoyed the game or two that I've played that is based on that. And I mean actually based on the real writing, not on some comedy version of, like, the Collect Call of Cthulhu or something.
Right.
So anyway, the living card game. Great artwork, for one thing. I'll tell you that right now. I looked through that, and there is some awesome little artworks in there. Of course, it's sharing some of the artwork with the Call of Cthulhu board game, since they're both coming from Fantasy Flight. And really, who wants to pay for the same artwork twice? I haven't gotten it on the table yet. I did read through the rules, and it has a couple of interesting mechanical premises in it that will be fun to play around with. The idea of and I can't remember exactly what they called it in the game, but you have these three pools of resources that you spend to bring cards into play and whatnot. And you either spend all of a pool or none of a pool. There's no in-between. So there's some definite balance issues in that, trying to balance what you've got available versus what you need to play, what you have. And clearly it's kind of a limiter for how many and how much you can bring in at any given time. So that'll be kind of fun to tinker around with and see how that works. The overall premise of the game seems to be that you are trying to accomplish these, what they call stories. And it's a two-player game, essentially. There's some multiplayer rules online, but a two-player game, whichever of the two of you completes the story the best gets a marker on that story, and if you get 5 markers, you win the story. Win 3 stories, you win the game. So it's you know, a very general overview here as I you know, haven't played it at all. But I'm kind of looking forward to it because, like I said, it's got some interesting things. It looks good, and it comes with 6, what are these, about 2 inches high?
Yeah, something like that. I was just thinking about that.
6 2-inch high solid plastic Cthulhus, which you use to mark which of your resource pools you have used this particular turn. And I don't care what else you say about the game, and I don't care how this game turns out. I now own 6 miniature Cthulhus.
Okay. Which is a win in anybody's column.
That's right. That's right. The rest of the game could suck. My $35 is well spent. I love it. So that's what I did that I haven't blocked from my memory this week.
You blocked the other thing from your memory?
I did. I almost forgot to put it in the show notes as I mentioned up in the forum.
There was good intentions there. I think we just got browbeat with rules.
Yeah. You tell them about it, because I'm not taking responsibility for this one.
Well, yeah, you know, a while back, I picked up the Fantasy Flight, one of their Silver Line games that comes in a nice little box called Red November. And the Red November is the name of an experimental gnomish submarine that apparently nothing ever works on, because you spend the entire game running around trying to fix stuff. Things burst into flames, rooms flood, you know, the engine explodes, missiles launch, there's a Kraken that eats you at some point. It sounded like it was going to be fun, and after Brian got through reading the rule book, he had a headache and one eye was twitching. And Jake and I still had no more idea as to what we were supposed to be doing, and it kind of went downhill from there.
Understand, Gamer Nation, this game comes in a box that is approximately 9 inches long by 4 inches wide and about an inch tall. There are 18 pages of rules.
Yeah.
And it's small print. It's not what you might call large print.
Yeah, they packed a lot of stuff in there.
Yeah. It's supposed to be a cooperative game. And I think it probably is a cooperative game, but it forces you to be uncooperative at certain points.
Yeah, it really does. You've like having to block random rooms, which usually has somebody in them. Resources not going where they need to go. It just didn't play well.
Yeah, it's and the rules are, like Andy said, overly complicated for no more than what the game is. I mean, okay, you get little plastic gnomes. That's great. You get even the board is more complicated than it needs to be. Okay, this board folds out in 4 sections, and it is still only about 18 inches long and 8 inches across. But it's a 4-section fold-out board. Come on. I don't need that.
Yeah, they could have made a wider box and just had it a bifold type of thing.
Yeah, just like a square box or something. I don't know. Yeah. I'm fine. But, you know, and neither Jake nor Andy nor I, and I'm the one who read the stupid rules, had a real clear idea of what we were supposed to do at any given time. And I don't know that it's because we're stupid. I don't think that's the case. I just don't think the rules were all that engaging and didn't really present themselves in sort of a clear manner, really.
I think that was probably the biggest thing, is they were very unclear and they just seemed to ramble on. I mean, it was covering stuff that it had already covered, but it still didn't give you a clear explanation of what you were doing, why you were supposed to be doing it, and why they even printed it.
Yeah, there's probably a good game in there somewhere. It just didn't come in the rules.
Yeah, it seemed to elude us, so.
Yeah. Oh, and yours was missing a piece.
It was, which is strange, because I thought, well, maybe I punched it out and lost it at home. Well, the game comes pre-punched, and they're in little plastic baggies, so it was just out and out missing a piece, so.
Yeah. And it's not like we feel compelled to contact Fantasy Flight and demand our piece, because I don't know that we're ever going to play it again.
I don't know that we will either. I mean, it was, you know.
The best thing I can say about Red November is if this is the kind of game you like, then this is a game you'll like. So there you go.
There you go.
What else did you do?
Well, I stumbled across a what was it? One of the special edition, cheaply priced complete saga edition of Lego Star Wars.
For what system?
That would be for the Xbox 360.
You dog.
Yes, all 6 episodes on one finely crafted little silver shiny type disc with lots of Lego Star Warsy goodness.
Excellent. I own the PC original trilogy version of that, and because I didn't really want to play the first or movies 1, 2, and 3.
I have the original edition as well, and I had a lot of fun with it. So I figured, well, you know, 3 more would be that much more fun. So far the Lego version of the movie has been better than the actual movie. So you know, it's been a win so far.
And I realize this is kind of an older game now, which feels strange saying it, but this is really, I think, one of the best Star Wars video games out there.
It is. I've had a lot of fun with this game over the years, and like you said, it is now an older game, which does seem strange to say, but it's just a lot of fun. It's enjoyable.
Yes, indeed. How far have you gotten?
Well, I just sat down the other day. I'm about halfway through episode 1, I think.
Aha. Uh-huh. Now I have an urge to play. Thank goodness I've got 2 days off.
Yes.
That's going to be going. And you're going to enter some sort of strange D20 radio contest, aren't you?
Yes, the wonderful folks over at Order 66 and the fine folks at Reaper Miniatures are sponsoring a miniatures painting contest. And I'm going to enter a Star Wars miniature that is going to be a conversion of a Reaper miniature, and a couple that I had looked at and actually had already ordered are on the way. And then I made the mistake of sitting down with Brian. He says, well, what about this miniature? Do this and this. And I was like, that's brilliant. I'll have to do that now.
Yeah.
They won't expect what I'm going to do.
And you're definitely the miniatures guy, because I can't paint, modify, or assemble miniatures for crap.
Well, I'll probably still wind up building and modifying the other two, but the one I enter will be the miniature that you pointed out to me, because it's just far too entertaining not to do.
Oh, yes. You people just will not believe it when he's done. Oh, and to give it away would be unfair, because then somebody
else really
would
claw
on to it. I'm going to do that. But yeah, this is going to be really cool, and you guys aren't going to believe it. And to be fair, it's also a Radio Free Homlet contest. They're also going to be doing ReaperCon, and they are doing a contest as well to do a miniature paint job and modification for D&D as well.
Yes. Yeah, I was I may still enter the D&D competition, but I want to do the Star Wars one first, because I think it'll be more difficult to pull off the Star Wars one, since there are no Star Wars figures from Reaper Miniatures.
Yeah, this will be cool. You guys will enjoy this one. I'm really looking forward to see how that one ends up, because that's going to be great. We've arrived at the end of the show yet again. We tried to be sneaky and give it a miss, but it's got some sort of epic level perception stats or something and found us anyway. Someday we'll fool it.
First, thanks to everyone who took time to comment in the forums on the show. Kat especially appreciates your input and feedback on her segment. We're happy to have her with us, and she's happy to be part of the show, so she too sends you her thanks.
Absolutely. I got an interesting message on the forums today.
Did you?
And this is something I ran across while participating in the Order of 66 live broadcast. Order 66 live broadcast. last night. One of our listeners, a fellow by the name of Bunny Man, go figure.
Bunny Man?
Sent me a message, and the subject of this message is as follows. How Brian and Andy wound up as NPCs in my cyberpunk game.
Excellent.
He mentioned that last night, and I was just tickled pink to hear it, and I wanted to find out more about it, so I asked him to send me a message. This is what he sent me. I will read it verbatim. The other day, I finally got the urge to run another game of Cyberpunk. It is my game of choice when I feel like doing old games, mostly because everyone in my gaming circle remembers it fondly. That being said, I wanted to do things different this time around, turn things on their head, so to speak. So I thought to myself, what if us old gamers would play a group of teenagers? Nobody would be terribly skilled at anything, and nobody would have the resources to buy anything useful. Now, Cyberpunk being the gritty setting it is, I needed an equally gritty location for my story. I finally settled on an old orphanage, and having the poor players literally begin the story on a bus from Juvie headed to said orphanage. Now, an orphanage isn't complete without a director for the kids to hate. In this case, I literally created a monster to run it. Director Karkaroff was a giant of a man who was horribly disfigured by his cybernetics, and sadly, he was the first thing the players saw when they entered the orphanage. After the tense encounter with the psychotic director, I needed to explain how the place was run. Enter Brian and Andy, a couple of kids who were playing Power Grid when the players ran into them. Awesome. They were a pain to portray accurately, and I admit that my portrayal of Andy was perhaps not very accurate, but you guys were on my mind when I thought of troubled kids, so you got the role, so to speak. This being a cyberpunk game, violence eventually ensued, and Karkaroff's mad scheme of selling the residents as slaves and body parts was uncovered when the dust settled. You might be pleased to note that Brian and Andy survived the experience, and gave the players useful info to piece together that something horrible was going on. They eventually ran away along with the players to establish their life in less violent places. The game was so successful, I was thinking of revisiting the characters again a year later, where Brian and Andy had started their own favorite local gaming store, and had picked up Jake as an employee for their store. Note that in Cyberpunk, nothing is what it looks like, so the shop is a somewhat successful game store that sells a variety of less-than-legal things in the back. Hope you guys enjoyed the story, and hopefully you guys will continue to... And then the message cuts off right there, and I'm wondering if Karkaroff returned. Bunny Man, are you okay? Are you alive, Bunny Man? Did you get attacked? I don't know what. No, this is an awesome, awesome story. I love it. I can just picture him trying to do us as teenagers.
Oh God.
I can't believe that. That's cool. Thank you very much, Bunny Man, for including us in your game. That was great.
That's awesome.
If you as Gamer Nation have any stories where you've somehow accidentally included us in your game as NPCs, we'd love to hear them, because that just tickles me pink. I'm amazed. I've been tickled pink a lot today. I don't know why that is, but it's...
Yeah, got a rather rougy tint going on over there.
Yes, indeed. That's good stuff. Thanks, Bunny Man. That's a fun story. Last Monday, something fairly amazing happened. And I know we've had our troubles with FeedBurner and its reliability, but this number is so incredible, I have a hard time believing that FeedBurner just made it up out of nowhere. According to FeedBurner, we had over 1,000 individual listens of Game On in one day. That's never happened to us before, and we are very surprised and at the same time very gratified to have that kind of listenership.
Yeah, wow.
Wow. You heard it here. Wow. That's because that was my initial reaction as soon as I saw it. It was just like, whoa, what in the world? Yeah, thank you, Gamer Nation.
Indeed.
That's incredible.
In a sort of related way, iTunes still has us on page 2 because they count things in a totally unique and Apple-specific way. I'm pretty sure it's related to the number of times Steve Jobs has to bend over in the morning to tie his shoes. The position of the planet Mercury and the particular shade of blue the sky becomes at 20 minutes prior to sunset. I knew that's how they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a little helping hand over there, and assuming you like the show, hand out a few stars and kind words to help us climb up the charts.
Indeed. We need your votes. Change can happen. Real change. Oh, sorry. I didn't even vote Democrat.
So this is how democracy dies, to thunderous applause. Yes.
Oh, we're getting letters. We're getting letters. Okay. Yes, indeed. Should you happen to be of a mind to share your thoughts with us, you may do so by emailing us at gameon@d20radio.com or logging into our forums at www.d20radio.com/forums. It's more exciting when you do it that way, you see.
It is, but you keep getting me in the eye with a dot.
Hey, put on your sunglasses, man.
Yeah, and you're missing a W in there.
Am I? Is it still www.d20radio.com/forums?
It is.
There you go. All better. Anyway, you can participate in such enlightening discussions as what's on everyone's game shelf and the even more exciting why Andy can't read. Head over and speak your mind. You can even comment on specific episodes. It's more fun than a barrel full of ninja monkeys hopped up on goofballs.
Ninja monkeys.
Yeah, gotta watch out for the ninja monkeys. They're almost as bad as the laser beam sharks.
Yeah, almost. Mm-hmm. You throw the goofballs in there, over the top.
That's right. So until next time, Gamer Nation,
Game on!
This podcast is intended for entertainment and educational purposes only. All specific names, titles, or products mentioned are copyrighted by their respective rights holders. Some sounds and music are provided courtesy of SoundSnap.com and Freesound.org. Reboot is copyright Alliance Entertainment. All original content of this podcast and its related website are intellectual property of Game On and D20 Radio.
Afraid of the dark.